Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And, Dad, today we're going to interview two men who share our passion and desire to see abortion come to an end.
Ryan, it is really a pleasure to meet people for the first time who have the same passion, the same love for children, and the same desire to protect them from abortion. And these are two gentlemen that have come into my life, and I like them both already. Brian Fisher and Jeff Bradford are the two gentlemen. They work together at an organization called Online for Life. And we're going to talk about that today because these guys are onto something. They're both former CEOs and business type people, right? That is your background.
Right.
And you have decided to take that expertise and use it for the pro-life cause. Gentlemen, welcome to Family Talk.
Thank you so much for having us here. It's an honor.
We're glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Talk about what Online for Life is all about. What's different about that than all the other pro-life organizations?
Well, mainly it's an organization of businessmen who God has called out of a lot of different industries to come and rescue children from abortion. And we realized several years ago there's a huge need and a huge mission field. Do you know there's over 2 million internet searches a month for abortion-related terms in the United States? 2 million internet
by women who are looking for abortion,
by people who are looking for terms like abortion clinic, RU486, morning after pill, and many of those searches are in fact from women who are looking for an abortion provider to take care of their problem.
Where do those calls go?
Normally, they're going to go to a Planned Parenthood or to abortion clinics who have been advertising online for years and find a lot of their clients and their victims online. And so we in 2007 started this idea of intervening to get into the lives and hearts and minds of those women.
Whose idea was this?
As a gentleman named Tim Kachuriak, who's a dear, dear friend of mine, is an internet marketing genius. He owns his own digital marketing agency today. And I was at Coral Ridge Ministries, which was D. James Kennedy's media ministry. And Tim came bounding in the office one day and he says, "I think we can save babies using the internet." And that's actually how the idea got started.
Well, Brian, where does your passion come from? I mean, there are many things as a successful businessman that you could do with your life. Why this one?
God just called me to it over a period of years. I've been a Christian all my life. I have a blessed, boring testimony. I mean, I grew up in the church and youth group and got married out of college and had two kids. And, you know, my life has been free from a lot of drama and other things that a lot of people go through. But in 1999, my first son, Caleb, was born. And I remember sitting in McGee Women's Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and holding him just a few hours after he was born. And just for a fleeting moment, in between the moments of terror of being a new dad, I thought, we abort him. We, Americans, abort tiny, helpless, innocent children. And that was actually the start of me beginning to get educated about the abortion holocaust and what's going on in our nation. And over a period of 6 or 7 years, the Lord birthed that call and became very, very pronounced in 2008, 2009.
Jeff, what is the origin of your involvement in Online for Life?
Well, I met Brian in the summer of 2010. I had sold my company and was doing consulting work, and Brian handed me his volunteer business card at that point with Online for Life, and I went home and set it down by my phone, and my life has never been the same since.
Well, you know, the effort to protect babies and to defend life is ordinarily something that women carry the load for. Men are involved in it too, but I don't know very many successful businessmen who walk away from that and give their lives to this cause. How do you explain that in your case?
Well, for me personally, when Brian showed me what they were doing, I was so intrigued from a business standpoint that we could use our business acumen, our experience, technology in order to rescue babies. And at that time in my life, I was dealing with a very personal story that God wouldn't let go of. And I began to really see what Brian was doing through the internet and rescuing babies. And
is it all right if I ask you about that?
Sure.
Because you guys had a chapter in your life,
yes, sir,
where you made a bad decision. How long ago was that?
21 years ago.
And it involved an abortion.
It did. My wife and I were engaged to be married. We had about 4 or 5 months left to go, and we found out she was pregnant. And before you knew it, we were at Planned Parenthood. And within about 48 hours, had aborted our first child. And literally for 15 years, we didn't talk about it. I was too ashamed. I became a lay pastor, my wife a worship pastor. I led home teams. We were under the guise of being transparent. And yet this was the sin that I was too ashamed to talk about. And it was really in the mountains here in Colorado that I told one person during that 15 years and was my best friend. And I can tell you, it was one of the hardest things I'd ever done. Just to admit to another man that I had not chosen my child, that there was a 21-year-old girl not born today because of my decision, my cowardice, just not to show
up
to the wedding.
Does that hurt to this moment?
You know, it is still very hurtful. I know that
the sin is forgiven.
The sin is forgiven.
But the pain is still.
But the pain as a father. Yeah. And that's really where God wouldn't let me go. I could not believe, as Christian men in America, of Christians that are going to church every day as a man, and now as a father of four, that we were allowing this to go on for 40 years and 56 million of our children. As men, we go to war, we fight for the life of the weakest, and yet, as a father, I didn't protect the life of my own child.
As a matter of fact, Jeff, you take the blame for that. You told me, and I appreciate you being willing to open that part of your life, but it really was not your wife that was driving this. It was you.
It was me, and I think if you look at studies and statistics, very much so men drive this issue. And I know that my wife would have never chosen to abort our first child, but she went along with it. And if I would have given her just a moment of hope, she would have very gladly not gone to that Planned Parenthood.
Mm. Is that guilt still with you?
It's tremendous. You know, today I celebrate the birth of my oldest son, who just turned 17 today. So God has been incredibly gracious to my wife and I, allowing us to stay married now for 21 years. And he has given us four children. And yet I know that there is a 21-year-old girl that would otherwise be here today had it not been for my cowardice, if I would have stood up. And if I would have been a more godly man, I think if I would have not fallen away from the Lord.
Well, what was going through your head at that time? What were you thinking? Why did you even consider it? You were raised in the church too?
We were. We were raised in the church.
Did anybody ever talk to you about the value and the preciousness of life?
No, I wish they would have, Dr. Dobson.
Do you ever have a pastor stand up and say, this movement is wrong?
No. In fact, after talking about it last year with my wife, you know, she mentioned, you know, the fact that the government sanctioned it allows for it to happen, she thought it must be okay. And the fact that
no one talked
about it.
Saddest thing you've said. That the government, the Supreme Court really said to you, there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So we believe the lies, but to answer your question, as weak as it sounds, we didn't want to embarrass our family at the wedding and show up pregnant. Because they said, you'll be showing.
Yeah.
And that, as simple as that was. And I know where I'm so passionate about this for many reasons, but if someone would have stood in the gap, if someone would have been there and said, this is your child, you can do this, then there would be a young girl alive.
And that's what you're trying to do right now.
Yeah. But, Dad, we hear this similar answer all the time. I mean, you dealt with colleges. In fact, you went on air and said, I know who you are, and if you don't change your policy, I'm going to tell everyone who you are. Because we've got Christian colleges that said, if you get pregnant, we're going to kick you out.
That's right.
But if you have an abortion, no one's going to know. And they were secretly...
Yeah, the guys did not get sent home.
No.
And this is still going on.
Absolutely.
This is something that really eats at me.
It's hypocritical, and that's why it's so much
worse. A guy gets a girl pregnant in college. She starts the show, and she gets sent home because the college does not want to share her shame. The guy, however, if he is identified, is not sent home. Yeah. There's something wrong with that.
I think there's almost even more pressure on Christians to abort than non-Christians because we don't want the shame and guilt and the fact that at church no one talks about it. And so it is it's something that you don't even know if it's a forgiven sin, if it's something. So it is the transparency. But I can tell you this, in telling my story, I can't tell you how many men have come up to me and said, you know, I've never told anyone. And it is that transparency that begins to heal the nation.
It's powerful. And they want to tell somebody because they're holding that guilt in. They're holding that shame in, and Satan can use that. Dad, you know, you asked, have you ever heard a pastor say this is an evil thing and you can't do that? You've been in the pro-life movement for decades and decades and decades. Was there ever a time where lots of pastors talked about pro-life from the pulpit? Has there ever been a time since Roe v. Wade that pastors came out and stood up and said, this is wrong? I mean, during the Roe v. Wade fight, was anybody standing up? I mean, the Roman Catholics, absolutely. And when we see them in front of the Planned Parenthood clinic by our house regularly, and they could not be any kinder. They stand there and they pray in snow and in rain and in hail, and when it's too hot every single day, they're there. But the evangelicals, I got to call it out, has there ever been a time where lots of pastors have been a part of this?
There are a lot of pastors who care about this issue and about life and care about families and marriage. And I would not disparage them because some of them are just pouring their lives into it. Like Jim Garlow.
Absolutely.
And our
I was thinking as I say this, well, I know Jim Garlow talks about it. But I mean a majority. You know, if you're going to go into lots and lots of churches throughout America, how many are you really going to hear? Is it a lot? It's not a majority.
I think there are a lot who would say and mean it, I am pro-life. But whether they come with passion, whether they come with conviction, whether they are willing to take the heat from the women who have had abortions and who complain when anything about life is mentioned, I don't have a number on it. I don't know what the percentages are, but there are an awful lot who don't. And you made reference to something we shared just before we went on the air, that I happened to be listening to the radio when the Roe v. Wade decision came down from Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I was angered. I was deeply disturbed. And then I heard nothing. There was no echo, not even in our conservative church, Ryan. I heard nothing about it.
It's crazy.
And it took my breath away. And I've been trying to do what I could ever since, and inviting these two gentlemen here is part of that. I will do it for as long as I have breath within my body. Brian, you have a new book where you're talking about the ultimate exploitation of women, and you're talking about abortion.
I am, and that phrase actually was not invented by a man. It was said by Alice Paul, who was an early feminist and one of the original architects of the Equal Rights Amendment. The early feminists understood, as they were fighting for the right to vote, that abortion was the ultimate discrimination and exploitation of women. If you look at the history of abortion in America, we discover that its rise and its legalization and its continued marketing is largely being done by men, not women. And although our culture
believes— Now, that's not generally known.
It is not generally known, and usually there's a lot of stunned faces when I make that statement. But there are two primary drivers of the abortion epidemic. The first was eugenics. Planned Parenthood and the eugenics movement has largely been driven by rich men who were attempting to minimize other races, namely African American. And the second primary reason is because men, unfortunately, in our culture tend to be sexually promiscuous. And when you remove their obligation to an unborn child from the table, which is what Roe v. Wade did, you basically give them a get-out-of-jail-free card to express themselves sexually however they want to. And those two factors, almost exclusively driven by men, mm-hmm. is why Roe v. Wade is legal and continues to be legal today.
What research did you do? What information did you garner for writing this book?
There's over 300 citations in the book, and it's only about 150 pages long. It's littered with information, mainly from public information. We went back into the history books and charted the legalization of Roe v. Wade and how it happened. We looked through Margaret Sanger's biography, her autobiography, and other books about her.
She was a flat-out racist,
yeah.
And they hold her up as an icon.
Yeah,
how do they do that? I mean, the Earth Day movement, the founder of the Earth Day movement ended up murdering his girlfriend, and they have hidden that as much as they possibly can. How is it the pro-abortion movement still holds up Margaret Sanger being, I mean, an incredible racist?
Well, the entire abortion movement is built on lies. There's nothing true about any aspect of the movement. And so Margaret Sanger's life, if you can read it in her own autobiography and other biographies, she was a sexual deviant and highly disturbed woman in many cases. And yet her life was also driven and influenced heavily by men. She is really the only woman in the pro-abortion movement in American history, and she was highly influenced by other men who drove her opinions. But it's smart marketing. The abortion industry has been extraordinarily effective at marketing abortion and Sanger and Planned Parenthood. And since the eugenic movement is a perfect example of that, the eugenics movement was very out in the open prior to World War II. And then after Nazi Germany fell, all of a sudden that obviously fell out of favor in America. And so now they went to population control and they went to birth control and eventually abortion rights. But all
still
those
rooted
things,
in racism.
They're all there basically just clouding the real issue, which is a eugenics attempt to eradicate African Americans and Hispanics from the country.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we've got the Clippers owner, Donald Sterling, now all over the press for making the most ridiculous, stupid comments he could, and yet the press isn't talking about Sanger or Planned Parenthood.
And nobody touches that one.
Yeah.
No, she's sacred in that world, and it's ironic considering her long history of abuses and the things that she said. You can read her letters. If you read Pivotal Civilization,
yeah,
which was one of her hallmark papers, today, if that paper were published by somebody other than her, it would be public outcry from coast to coast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially today.
Is your book available?
Yes.
Is it out?
Yeah, Abortion, the Ultimate Exploitation of Women. You can get it at onlineforlife.org, and it's going to hit bookstores here in about the next month.
All right, let's talk a little more about Online for Life. What's the basic concept there?
The basic concept is we have a huge opportunity to save thousands and thousands of babies because their moms and dads are using the internet to find information on an abortion provider. So Online for Life forms relationships with pro-life pregnancy centers. We work with 45 centers in 23 states. And we basically come into those areas and we go online and we basically intercept them from the abortion clinics. We offer them a free ultrasound and free medical care and good counsel, and we talk to them about their genuine options. And so when somebody goes and searches for an abortion clinic in a major city, we're there, and our job is to give them the option to have an appointment at a pro-life pregnancy center. And because we're business guys, we track that process all the way through. And so by God's grace, and it is by His grace, almost 1,900 children have been rescued from abortion from the most difficult situations you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Abusive situations, rape situations, dependency situations, abandonment situations. But fortunately, because we're able to coordinate our efforts with pro-life pregnancy centers and using the invaluable asset that is the internet, we're able to do some great work. And this is a crazy statement, but we can end abortion in this country.
Yeah.
I realize that's out of favor right now, but we have enough data that shows that if we connect with enough women and we share the gospel of Jesus Christ with them and provide them tangible help, we can end this thing.
Well, we certainly can, and it may be out of favor with the press or with the current administration, but it's not out of favor with Americans.
Amen.
I mean, we keep passing better laws, you know, with ultrasounds and parental notification and waiting periods because the technology has changed. My friend Clint, he's one of my best friends here in town. Their baby was born at 28 weeks. Mm. And she's perfect. I mean, you've seen this baby, Dad.
Yes,
and you were telling me that when you were at Children's Hospital, those babies were never going to live.
Well, two-pound babies when I was at the medical school, two-pound babies just struggled to make it because of something called hyaline membrane disorder. And now those babies live.
Oh, yeah. She's perfect. You know, I mean, she was less than a pound. There's a photo of her with his wedding ring around her foot. I mean, that's how little she was.
Wow.
You know, they were in the hospital for 3 months with her, but she's home and, I mean, perfect. She's a perfect baby. You would never know. She's a little bit tiny, but my daughter's tiny and she wasn't early, so, you know.
All right, I want to understand how Online for Life really works and what you're trying to do, because I think this is unique. I don't know anybody else that's doing this. A young lady, let's suppose she's 17, she's not married, she comes up pregnant, she's scared, she doesn't know where to go, where to turn. Her parents will get mad at her if they find out about it, and they may even abuse her. She may not even have a dad, and her circumstances are tragic. So she goes online, and she's looking for an answer, and she eventually makes a contact through the internet, or she picks up the phone and calls. And she is not looking for somebody who does what you do.
Mm-hmm.
She is looking for where she can get an abortion.
Right.
Is that right?
Most of the time, yes, that's exactly right.
And her first question to you is,
how much do you charge for an abortion?
That is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you charge?
Yeah, and that starts a conversation, and we certainly disclose to her that we do not offer abortions, nor will we refer for abortions. However, we have the opportunity to share with her legitimate options. Most abortions are because the woman is coerced, usually by a man, and most abortions are made, that decision is made in haste. If we give the woman a chance to pause and to think and to contemplate and to reason, and that just might be for a few minutes, it's enough for her to say, you know, before I go through with the abortion decision, maybe I need to sit down with somebody and have a conversation.
Mm.
Maybe I need to have an ultrasound to make sure the pregnancy is even viable.
Now, you're not trying to coerce her on the other side. You're trying to give her information she desperately needs.
We're an educational nonprofit. Our job is to give them factual information. And we know that once she comes into a pro-life pregnancy center where she'll have that ultrasound, and she'll have the opportunity to sit down with some folks who can provide tangible, real help and hope that oftentimes she will then choose life for her child. Because we don't think that most women, maybe all women, deep down inside, do not want to take the life of their child. They just feel like they have
no
options.
That's the most unnatural thing in the world.
It is. For a mother to take the life of her child is just terribly and fatally ironic. And so when you give the woman the opportunity to take a different path, where the child's life is preserved, she's going to take that path.
I mean, I've spoken at hundreds of pregnancy resource centers around the country, and I've met hundreds of girls that have been in that situation. And it's interesting. They always feel alone, no one's going to understand, and that they're incapable of handling a child.
And that sometimes mom or dad are pushing them like crazy.
Absolutely. Could be that, too. You know, I heard someone the other day talking about pro-lifers saying, oh, you know, I see you guys picketing outside, you know, Planned Parenthood clinics, but you're not going to raise these babies, are you?
Right.
I was like, yeah, all the time. They're adopting all the time. These are all wanted babies.
And you were one of them.
I certainly was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got a bunch in my family. I mean, it's maddening to hear that. And you feel for these girls because they just feel desperate.
Yeah. Well, it's 41 years of corrupt, I hate to use this term, but marketing. You know, the reality is that the women in that situation, the 1.2 million women a year in that situation, have not been told the truth.
Yeah.
Well, this program moved far too fast, and there's so much more I want to talk to you all about. Let me just say how much I appreciate you being here, but even more than that, thank you for caring about the unborn child and giving your lives to that cause, and we'll talk some more next time.
Well, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to do this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, Dr. Dobson.
And if you'd like more information about Brian Fisher's book, Abortion, The Ultimate Exploitation of Women, or to find out more about Family Talk, please call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our program right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Ryan Dobson for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and I want to take a moment to let you know about a really exciting opportunity. We have recently received a $400,000 matching grant. Every dollar you donate this month to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk immediately becomes $2. So if you'd like to help us reach the goal of $400,000, please call us right now at 877-732-6825. You can also donate on our website, drjamesdobson.org, on our Facebook page, or through our Family Talk smartphone app.